Hello and welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. We're live tonight and exclusive on Podbean Live. And with me as a special guest, it is Andrew Marr. Are you there, Andrew? Hello. Can I hear you? Oh. I have a feeling that you can... There we go.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Good. It suddenly worked and I suddenly thought, oh no, you're not going to hear me. But it was bouncing and it tells me that...
It was ringing and then I pressed it again and it woke up. So there you go.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good.
Can you hear me this time? Can you hear me unlike last time?
I certainly can. Yep. No, it's coming through loud and clear. That's fantastic.
That's great.
So we thought we'd do this extra kind of slightly impromptu show tonight because we didn't manage to do a commentary on Sunday night because there wasn't a race on. But this Sunday night, there is a race on. So we can we can catch up with that one as well on Sunday and go over all the kind of main headlines because there's been a lot happening in the last week in motorsport. It's been really kind of action packed. There's more. We had a big show last night, which if you haven't seen, it's on YouTube with Will Daniels, who is a Formula One wind tunnel engineer and also a pro sim racing driver. So make sure you go onto the YouTube channel, which is under Hugh Hattrick or the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, and you'll be able to get that one as well. It's very, very good, if I even say so myself. So Andrew, what have you been looking at in the headlines of motorsport this week?
Well, there's a few sad things. Obviously, Williams is in trouble. And Claire Williams, there's nothing finalised as of yet, but it's kind of a weird statement because it went through three levels of obviousness. There was like, we're not looking to sell the whole team. We're looking to have a minority we're open to a minority share or a majority share or selling the whole team. So it's like, so in other words, you are open to sell. Oh, okay. But basically, they it's looking like they really need some help. And they've lost their main sponsor, Rocket or Rokit or whatever they call it.
Some company
that isn't as well known as Red Bull. They're meant to be there for a few more years and they've left. It could be because of this COVID thing. It might be that. It might, but I would imagine that if they were with Mercedes, they wouldn't be so worried. And then, of course, Renault. Because they've got the cost capping and also the COVID thing, Renault are losing 1,400 jobs.
Really?
Which is
goodness
a
me,
a lot.
Yeah.
Is it Renault? Or is it McLaren? Oh, it's McLaren, actually.
Was it McLaren that are losing 1,400 jobs?
Goodness me. 1,200 are going.
Goodness. That is a huge...
And 70 of those are from the F1 team.
Wow.
Obviously, they've got the car manufacturing side as well, which has not been doing very well, apparently. I think they make great cars, as far as I can tell, but I have been watching some YouTube videos of people saying how poor some of the customer care and reliability of those McLaren cars are, which is so sad because, I mean, the McLaren F1 won't be in that category, and I would imagine the P1 won't be in that category, but all these others that they've been making,
that would be something. Now, Ant has joined us, so it's good to see him. Good to. Thanks very much for joining with me. He's given us 174 hearts. According to Podbean, which is rather nice. Thank you very much, and hope you're having a good week. Did you enjoy our show last night that we did with Will Daniels? We certainly enjoyed doing it. It was good fun.
He was making lots of comments, as was I.
Yes, I hope I answered your question.
Intelligent. Not all of it. I cried a lot. The question I asked about a driver change, it wasn't trying to get out of him about any particular driver. No, wink, wink. It wasn't. I was just thought that as he's in that situation.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
From someone who's a young lad, he's in the team, how does it affect him? Because we don't often get to hear from these people, do we? We hear from the bosses and they're always going to toe some kind of company line, aren't they?
It was
interesting. I enjoyed it.
Now, we've also got the news that we've had the first eight races in the championship calendar confirmed.
Yes.
So we have two races at Austria, one at Hungary, two in Britain. And I think then it goes on to, is it Spain in August, and also Italy and Spa. They have all been confirmed. It's a good lineup.
Austin, Texas. Is they're going to go? They're going to have two races at Austin as well, I think. Is it?
That must be later on in the year then. Yeah, yeah.
Because they're talking about this reverse grid, and how they might try that for the second race in Austin. But it's been agreed by everyone apart from Mercedes.
Yeah.
Who are likely to veto it?
Because, and it has to have everybody. In order to agree with it, that's the only problem.
It needs consensus, not a vote. The vote has to be consensus.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I think it's going to be a really good year because there's so many drivers who are changing their seat at the end of it, who will be in the last year with their team, and they'll be wanting to give their best. I think to go out with a good score with a championship. So I wonder, I think Hamilton must still be the favourite, to be fair, because he's got the continuity, and obviously the car is very, very good from last year, and it looked pretty good in testing in this year. And you kind of wonder, have they been able to do any more between, obviously the factory was shut, but now that they've restarted since the testing in February, to when the races are going to start? You kind of think, could they do anything?
You can't stop them thinking, can you?
Exactly.
You can stop them being in the factory. You can stop them testing and this kind of stuff, but you can't stop the engineers thinking. I know as a fact that Adrian Newey's got a room in his house that's his office, and he's got a big drawing board on it, and he sits there and he draws designs. You're going to stop that happening. Who's going to go to Adrian Newey and say, no, you can't do that in your home? Like, get out of my house. this is my life,
Making things go faster.
It's interesting because obviously this season is a stress fact. Fest. There you go.
Stress fest.
That's what I was trying to say. English. Hello. And you really see the metal of an organisation when they're under that kind of stress, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like we keep saying about, they keep changing the rules in an attempt to make things closer, and all it does is make things further apart, because the teams that are well organised and have the resources will always react quicker and better. And and in this year, we're going to see how well all the teams sort themselves out and adapt to what is a very strange year, and there's going to be a lot of running about, and there's going to be two sets of teams, two groups within each team to do the different races, because they've got to have a backup, and it's going to be mad. So we're going to see. I think Mercedes is in a good place to take advantage of that. They're well known as being pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm saying someone's squeaking. I don't think it's coming from my side. My chair is not squeaking as far as I know.
It might be my knees.
But
it's your chair. I just heard it.
Was it my chair?
I heard it. It sounded like a chair.
Something moved. But sorry about that. I hope it's...
Al Murray doing his Scottish impression. have you ever heard that? Al Murray is doing his impression of the three Scottish accents.
Oh no, I don't think I have.
Have you never heard that? It's quite funny, especially because he's a lot from, I don't know, South, isn't it? And he went to the University of Oxford. He's not common at all.
No,
he says there's three. There's the warm chamois leather on your nads, which sounds, oh hello, I'm Scottish, hello. There was the creaking door, which is what you're doing now, and there's the Jack Russell.
What's the Jack Russell one?
What? get school in English! Something like that. He didn't say that, he was swearing. But I won't do that on this. I'm being very good.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
Well, it's been, I have to say, it's, I, I'm... going back to Formula One, I can't wait. I think it's going to be so good. I mean, just over a month away, and we're going to finally be in Austria, getting things moving. I'm really, really kind of can't wait to get it all sorted. Plus, we'll be doing some races. Hopefully, we'll do some commentary potentially on round about the 21st of June. So I'll keep you all well informed about that, because the races are going to be on Twitch, and then I'll be hopefully commentating on them. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be based on
proper races or the sim we're talking.
They are sim races from Assetto Corsa competition. So they'll be GT3 races. But no, they'll be really, really good. Actually, that's going to be fun. So I'll keep everyone informed as that goes, because that should be. I think they're going to be quite popular, and there should be quite a big audience ready to watch them. So we'll definitely get that sorted out as we come a bit nearer to it, because it looks around about 2 weeks on Sunday when that's going to be. Which I'm really looking forward to, actually. And also, I've been playing a little bit of GT Sport this week, and they had some great tracks and combinations with some incredibly dodgy driving, which was fun. you were in 1965 Mini Coopers at Goodwood.
It's
great fun. Great fun, and they bounce and they just ram you off the track anywhere and in any way they can. But I came second.
And you can see the way that it bounces around and it drifts the back end and somehow keeps going. So does it do that on GT?
It does. Yeah, there's a lot of the corners where in other cars you would have to slow down or you'd have to brake. But with the Mini, you can actually pretty much just kind of coerce it into the bend without having to brake. You maybe lift a little bit here and there. But it's amazing what the handling's like. Because it's such an old car, it could do with an extra gear. Because it struggles a bit with wheel spin or rev limit series and things like that, the way it's geared for the track. But no, it was fantastic fun, actually. It was really, really good. And that was a real laugh. Then we did Dragon Trail Gardens, which is a kind of a shorter track in the GT3 cars. And I was only about one, when I first did the times, I was about 1.6 seconds off the track record, which wasn't too bad. But it was a much harder race. And when they actually did the actual racing, the car seemed quite different to the kind of time trial setup. So I don't know what happened with that. But I didn't do too badly. So I'm getting closer towards getting an A rating. I'm almost at the top of B. Just a couple thousand points, roughly, I think, to go. And hopefully I should be there. But it's if you're playing Grand...
Talking to Daniel yesterday, you did sound like you knew what you're talking about. So it sounded very professional.
Well, it was funny, you know, because the last race that we watched with Josh driving and Will doing the engineering side, I mean, it was just like watching how do we do it in touring cars or even Formula One. You know, they've got constant conversation just about, you know, between the two of them. But it was really hard going in terms of the race at Barcelona. They were struggling to really kind of, they did overtake, to be fair. But it's a track that's very hard on tyres. So I think they were all struggling a bit. And also there was huge amounts of accidents. So whenever they had what looked like an opportunity, you know, they made four places forward, maybe in a couple of laps, and then they would crash into something and they'd be four places back, you know. It was a real hard one for them. And it's an hour-long race as well, you know, and then it was at sunset. So it was quite, you get all this, the sun coming in their eyes. So it's quite, I think it's quite realistic in that sense, you know. And it's a massive grid, you know, it's like 36 or more drivers. So it's a lot of cars. Wow. Yeah, it's a lot of cars.
It's a bit like touring cars, isn't it? Because there's like 30 odd in British touring cars.
And yeah, there used to be a lot, isn't
it? It's a melee as you go on the track. Is it like that?
Yeah, yeah. And then they always start off with a rolling start. So they do their kind of warm up lap and then they head off. So I think in touring cars, it's a standing start. But yeah, no, it's tough, and there's a lot of kind of ranges, I think, of skills in the driving in these events at the moment. So I think if someone does something stupid, it can really cause a lot of problems. But no, they're good fun to watch, and it's interesting to see how they all get on. And some of the drivers who have been in those races, we've commentated on in the Formula One virtual races. You know, like Enzo Benito and people like that. He's been in quite a few.
Oh, right.
Of them. Okay. Yeah, so everyone seems to be doing every type of race. You know, it's like David Perel's doing, you know, racing three or four times a week, it seems, or more. So it's interesting to watch. But I think for the person, the kind of everyday kind of gamer or sim racer, you know, who's doing it as a hobby, I think they're lacking something. It was, they were quite good, but you know, I don't know. Maybe it's because the field is so big, there's just too many accidents, or it, you know, I think it ruins it for maybe some of the better drivers. I suppose dealing with traffic, you could say, is important. But
so is this like the difference that we saw that day between the show race, you know, the F1 race that we commentated on, and then later they had the pro sim race, and they were, it was like a different world, wasn't it? The driving standard was. It was a new level.
Because you get
what you're talking about.
You get damage with this. There's full damage. Right.
Yes.
And so if you touch someone, immediately it comes on the radio that you've got damage. So it's quite realistic the way it all works. And it really ruins the race. And then that's you for an hour. It would be potentially half a car, you know, two wheels rather than four, you know. It was quite something.
Which is as it should be. I mean, that's how they should be running these F1 races, isn't it?
Yeah, with the I think they've got to put at least some form of damage on, because otherwise they're just crashing into each other without any effect, and I think that's ruining it for people. You know,
think it's a laugh, but the trouble is that the people who are tuning into it are not looking to see a laugh. They're looking to see something partially replaces a proper F1 race, and I think that's where they've made a big mistake. They have failed to recognise what their audience wants, what their audience is. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, oh, we're having a bit of a laugh here, whereas the Formula E, EGPs, they've understood there needs to be a measure of seriousness about what they're doing. To make up for the lack of proper racing, you know, live racing. The F1 guys don't seem to have got that. They don't understand. They really don't understand their own audience. So it doesn't bode well for the future of F1, because if they don't understand what it is we want, it's like, I mean, let's take things like this, the reverse grids and all these ideas they have about making close racing. Well, artificial close racing is what they've been trying for 20 years. DRS, slowing cars down. Even when they had do you remember when they had that stupid thing they had for a year or 2 years where they would have one car on a one flying lap qualifying?
Oh, yeah.
What a stupid idea. It was as boring as hell. People go, oh, well, it's Jeopardy. You know, you only get one chance. Yeah, but that's not what I want to watch. I don't want to watch one person not trying hard because they know if they screw it up, they're at the back.
Yeah.
I don't want to see David Coulthard consistently get out qualified because he needs to build up. I don't want to see one car, then one car, then one car. The current system is much better.
Quite long.
You get the clear tracks. But it's artificial. It's all kind of artificially trying to make it exciting, and they don't understand the racing is exciting. The skill of the driver,
that's the thing, isn't it?
Teams making fast cars makes it exciting. You don't need to pretend.
Yeah. See, I had an idea that for qualifying, you would put cars out in groups of four, and you know, from the championship lead downwards, at the first race it would be completely random. So you just pull numbers out of the bag, and so you'd have four people on the grid on cold tires. You know, they'd send them out for a kind of warm up. Then they would form on the grid, the first four grid slots, and then they'd have to do like a three lap qualifying. But whoever, it's almost like a mini race, so it's a matter of whoever whoever ended up in first, second, third, fourth. That's how it would run. Or they would have to all do a really good lap time, but run quite close to each other. You know, they might get a bonus point for ending up first as well, in the kind of mini race. So they would be all, you know, they wouldn't want to space themselves out too much. And then it'd be something a bit more interesting, you know, because they'd have to do a proper start on tires that were quite cold.
So what do you think about? I don't know. I don't see the point. It's like, I actually think the current system is good.
Yeah, to be fair,
the way that they, as it gets further on, you get less people in the way. Uh-huh. But there is a time. I mean, I used to think it was stupid that they only had a certain number of tires, and then they used to say, "Well, nobody goes out for half the session." Well, you're not giving them tyres, and then you're saying, use your tyres.
That's it.
If you put them out on as many tyres as you like, so that they can get the track, you know, that they can, not green the track up the other way around, starts green and becomes less green, you know, rubbing the track up, then you'll see them go out. You know, it's like, again, it's a lack of understanding what's going on. The thing that I think they should do is they need to have a point system for qualifying as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at the moment, all it is where you are on the grid, and that doesn't always do anything.
Can it work? Nice. Yeah.
It's nice being on pole. It's a nice statistic, and it helps a bit, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. But if as a team and as a driver, you've got a balance, well, I might get 3 points. You know, if the top three or five or whatever got, or the top 10, you know, got points for where they came, there'd be some real reason to try and get into the top 10. There'd be something to gain and something to lose in the championship by not showing that skill. Whereas now it's just, it takes up a Saturday and meh, you know. And
it's kind of, I mean, I try and watch it if I can, because I think if I'm in and around, I always try and make time for it. To watch it, because it can be quite good, and the coverage is quite good overall, and then you get all the build-up stuff as well, which is quite fun and quite interesting. I mean, it's a lot better than it was, to be fair, and I don't think it needs radical change. We have withdrawal symptoms because we've not had Formula One. It should have been in March, and it's not been there, you know, so we're kind of desperate.
it's weird, isn't it? You look forward to it
for months.
It's not there.
Months and months.
I was talking to
it.
Somebody on the phone yesterday. I don't even know how long I've been locked in my flat now. And then this person was saying it was 2.5 months.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
To work from home, ringing people up and stuff, which is what she was doing for me. 2.5 months now. And I'm like, is it?
What? I know, it's quite a thing, isn't it? Quite a thing.
I've gone nuts. I am actually now a jelly. lime flavored jelly. I blibble blubble blubble. I spend the whole day in my pajamas, unless I have to get out of them to go and do something. And I really don't want to. It's like today, when you texted me earlier, I was actually in Tesco's having damn shopping, which was stressful again because nobody cares. It's like everyone's just walking around how they want, and I'm there going,
it's a bit annoying, isn't it? That's the thing.
I just give up. So for the Formula One, I mean, it's like, we've been watching this for decades. We're used to it being there.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, it's never been like this for ever. I don't think, you know, since the early championship.
It all disappears. What happens if it all disappears?
Because I think, I mean, there'd be something new that would come about because it's kind of, you know, as things bounce back, it will be something. But a lot of firms have gone bust. I mean, you were talking about Williams being in severe difficulties and obviously looking to maybe sell the team or part of it. So it's quite a time. And a lot of companies will be in trouble and they're waiting to see what's going to happen. And hopefully they'll be able to keep going. I mean, it's a very difficult business. But we just hope that it can work. And they can keep going. Now, Ant has said, put ramps on the track and take off.
He's put, I've been looking at the super truck racing. I sent you a video. Don't know if you got the chance to watch it.
Yeah, I saw it a few weeks ago. I think it must have done its rounds. It's amazing. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a game at first.
It's insane. I've seen those trucks, or trucks very like that, once, one video on YouTube a while ago now, racing around on snow up a mountain, right? So when Ant sent me the video and I'm looking at this and thinking, what on earth is this? And then they've got those ramps. There was a video game I played years ago with that stuff. It's almost like Baja racing in America. You know, they do a similar sort of thing with yumps and jumps. But these trucks are insane.
Yeah.
They're going around corners on, like they're a Bond villain doing a two-wheel... stunt.
They're quite a machine.
They miss the ramp and it flips a couple of them over. And when they're doing these jumps, they're going further than the rally cars are when the famous jumps that they get on the world rally cars. Yeah, it's just, what on earth is going on? But with this big V8 in it, talk about noise.
Aye.
It's like trying to race a blancmange.
Yeah, but the height they get off the ramps is something else. Yeah. I mean, it's really high and rough when they land. And I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, is that a game or is that real? You know, it was quite hard to decipher. It was that, you know, it was kind of from it, you know, it looked like a game, but it's real.
It's almost like they deliberately made the cars to fall apart as well. Did you notice all these bonnets and bits coming off?
Yeah, because obviously it's like a bad job.
It's like a demolition. Demolition derby.
It's quite funny.
I half expected for the noise for the cars to go as they flew off that ramp, and some police car chasing them. You know,
it's quite a thing. Quite a thing.
Can we incorporate any of that into Formula One? I mean, they talk about going over curbs. Well, the curbs would be able to go over on those things.
Mm. Yeah, no, exactly, exactly. That it's quite a thing.
I was talking about sprinkler systems on the track, ramps, ditches. I mean, Bernie would do all that, wouldn't he?
Yep, anything for the show. Well, that's what I kind of think they should actually do with all the Formula One drivers. They should just get them on a game like Wreckfest, or they should give them really what they need, is like a touring car race from the 1990s. Put them in the touring cars around like Donington and things like that, and have the whole 20 grid on that. And then it would be fun. And I think people would watch that. I think they would genuinely want to watch that. But I think it's quite hard to get games that actually have those cars. I think maybe a little bit of iRacing does it, and things like R Factor possibly do it.
Get hold of them anymore? Can you not? Are there no sort of special stages on a game somewhere that have got the old RS500s or the old Volvos estates, the 850 T5s?
I'm not sure. Around? I mean, there was rumors that there was going to be a new grid game, and the grid used to have it was based on a game called Touring Cars, and then there was Touring Cars 2. Which was great. That was a great, fun game. And then it became Grid. And there were rumours they were going to have some new Grid game that was going to be... I don't know if that ended up becoming Project Cars or not, or maybe that was something else. But yeah, because I think if they could get a really good touring car race like that, it would be great fun, and it would be great to watch. Even if they can do it like they do Formula E with that kind of quality, or the IndyCar from, you know, sim racing, then I think you'd have a great... It would look fantastic. You know,
it does look amazing, that Formula E sim, doesn't it? I don't want to say game, because the quality of it is way above just game, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's really good.
The resolution on the graphics. I don't know whether you've done it, where you've watched it. I've not watched it a lot because I'm not particularly into Formula E, but so I tend to forget it's on and then it's too late.
I watched the one last week, or bits of it,
It looks real, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's only because there's a little bit of breakup in the pixels, or a wee bit of, you know, it looks a little bit different. But no, it's the accuracy is really good, and the commentary is very good, and they do what you expect. They have all the right kind of interviews, and they make it work. It's quite a thing. Now, Ant has said a chap rig for £150 to £200. Or is that 150,200 pounds? Well, I think to be fair, cheap. I was going to say, I mean, you can get. The one I've got is the PlaySeat Challenge, and you can get that for about £150 in most places now. Well, like Argos and Costco, not Costco, but online you could get them in a few different places. Even
that
PC World.
Just the seat, or does that include the?
That's just the seat. Seat is about £150.
The steering wheel, don't you? The force feedback. Yeah,
but you can get them. I've seen them on eBay. Similarly, somebody had them on eBay for about £70 or £80, but I think that's maybe a bit of a knackered one. There are a few different styles that you can get. I think that all the kind of one I've got. I mean, when you consider it, we're nearly 3 years old, and I have to say it's lasted really well. There's hardly any wear in it at all. And I'm a bit overweight.
How much you play on it?
Yeah, and how much weight I've got. So it's not used to 15 stone near enough, but
15 stone.
But I'm a bit less than that. I am, to be fair, a bit less than that. I have been doing my exercise, but you can actually get the steering wheel and pedals, the G29 Logitech G29, which is a really good entry level steering wheel and pedal set, was less than 150 quid at Costco. So, and that's a really good deal. So between the two, about £300 will get you something decent. Now, you can get other ones. For example, you can get like one, Sony actually did one for the PS4, a basic wheel and pedals, and it was only about £75. And it looked all right. So you just never know, and it is compatible.
Sony. I've always liked Sony.
Yeah, the quality seems it's similarly all right. Somebody bought one, I think for £49, and it was some Chinese one that was made. It was so bad. It was hilarious. Because they had to literally turn the wheel all the way, almost all the way around, even just to move it a little bit. And then from the little bit to full whack was like an inch. So it was impossible to use on any track. It was Jimmy Broadbent. It's like goodness. His cheapest ever sim rig he bought, or a steering wheel and pedals. But I'm sure it was like 50 quid or less.
This is the thing with China, isn't it? I mean, I buy stuff from China because it's so cheap. It's the only place I can afford to buy anything. So, and it's, you can just tell that they don't care. Quality-wise, they just don't. It's good enough, and it's the other side of the world, and what are you going to do anyway? Secondly, court. You know, it's just not going to happen. Did you see that guy Martin going around China
thing? Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he bought a bike. He bought like a Chinese equivalent of a Honda CG125, which, as we all know, is one of the most reliable bikes in the world.
Yeah,
CG125. Yeah. I passed my test on one of those. Actually, no, I'm lying. I did my CBT on the CG125, and then I was allowed to get on a 500 straight away because that was brilliant. And but the Chinese make one, or whatever it's called, the Qing Pong Wang 125.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the Chinese, they've probably got about 15 letters after that, like they do with that rip-off BMW X5.
Ah, that was hilarious. Yeah.
But just like, you know, XYZ1837221, which is meant to disguise the fact that they've got a BMW X5 and just drawn a shape exactly the same.
Ah, it's funny, isn't it? With the crash safety of a Fiat Panda.
Because it's made out of tinfoil, you see. Yeah. And it's the same with this bike. Now, the thing is, though, is that there is something about a very simply made, simple vehicle like that. You know, if they made something that didn't try to look modern, but just was like, you know, like we were saying about Fiat Uno. You know, it's simple, it works, it's fixable. The idea that the way to survive a crash is to not have one.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it works, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And with this bike, he got on and it just went, you know, off it went round China. And every time it broke down, he hit it with a hammer and fixed it. Yeah. So, that's China. But don't expect, you know, unless, of course, it's some kind of, I don't know, 5G spy system. I'm sure they're very capable of making amazing stuff. I mean, they go into space all the time, don't they? They've got their own rockets.
It's quite a thing. And they work.
I mean, this is the thing. They've got an extensive and successful space program. It's just, you know, they're a frightening country, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what was it? The head of China was saying they wanted to be they wanted to lead the world in the new world order, wasn't it? He came out with some statement to be a big influence in the new world order. And you kind of think, you see, this is all what's happening. And it's going to be quite an interesting segue that we can go into this, actually, because I did a video and a podcast about Lewis Hamilton and how you deal with all the things happening in America with the death of George Floyd. He'd commented about the Black Lives Matter group and all these kind of things. And then he made comments about how a lot of Formula One was just ignoring it and not saying anything. And so I talked about that. I don't know if you heard the show or not.
I didn't. I've not had the chance. Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. But it was more for the fact of, you know, was it wise for Hamilton to say these things? Because the big problem is a lot of people will say, yeah, they support these groups, and they won't look at what do they actually support? You know, what do these groups really want to say? And that's the problem, because if you go onto their websites and you look at their kind of criteria of what they want to achieve, and you realize, hang on a minute, they want to basically take down Western civilization the way that we know it, you know. And I think when he accused Formula One of being very quiet, and he said, you know, I know who you are and what you're doing and so on. And I kind of made me think, because it was quite an emotive subject for me, because I am quite political in some ways. And yes. I kind of thought, well, without going into detail on this show, I thought there's probably a good reason why there's a good reason why Formula One have kept its head out of it, because they know it's got nothing to do with them. You know, in terms of Formula One is a sport all about competition, and it's you've got to be good to get up there. But some of it, to some degree, is meritocracy. But in other degrees, it's about your money. You know, you've got to be successful or be able to get big backing to really have any chance.
We've moaned about this, haven't we? We've moaned about how some of the best drivers in the world, they've got no backing and they don't make it.
And it's very, very tough.
I think, Palmer was his manager, and he had crowdfunding
to get
Justin Wilson's seat in Minardi. I mean, it's Minardi. It sat at the back.
It is tough.
He was there for one season, and that was it. No more money.
Yeah. I think the problem is that if you make a comment and say you support a particular group, and then in turn that group becomes very violent, or is found out, or is found guilty of violence, then your name is branded with that group. And although I know some of the younger guys in Formula One have put their names to all of this stuff, they could come to regret it. If the news comes up that these groups have actually been responsible for a lot of damage, and also for potentially other injuries to other people or worse, and you don't want to have your name involved in any of that, so that's kind of the argument I went into, and it's had over 50 views on YouTube already, which I know for doesn't sound like much, but for one of our videos, that's amazing. So it's one of those kind of like things, you know.
See, if I keep out of it, you get lots of people listening. The thing about social media, and we've talked about a little bit about this before we started the show, and is there seems to be the way that there's normal people that will read what's read. If they disagree with it, they'll say calmly. They'll put their comment, I don't think this is correct, and this is what's really going on, or whatever. You know, they'll make their comments, and then you'll get, but you're an idiot. Ah, well, that's because you've got your head up your ass. No, you've got to... And then it degrades immediately into bile.
Yeah.
What the hell's that got to do with having a discussion about anything? How can you sort anything out if all you're doing is... It's like listening to those 10-year-olds that are in Parliament. The right honourable member for the other side has been sitting on a pineapple. Hey,
it's getting crazy.
And it's like, what the hell has this got to do with fixing a country or sorting out that some poor sod was brutally murdered? Or whatever, you know, whatever the subject is.
It's getting on the wrong bandwagon. And I think there's a good reason why.
The thing is, the thing is, it's not about what bandwagon you're getting on. It doesn't matter what bandwagon you're getting on, because immediately there will be thousands of people that will start chucking mud at you. And it won't be based on any sort of, you know, I've not read what or heard what Lewis Hamilton said, okay? So I don't know what he said. But it, in a sense, doesn't matter what he said, because anything he said, there's going to be a massive chunk of people having a go at him and putting him in that pigeonhole. Just like you said, you know, it's like people are now going to associate him with that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think that's a big problem. It will come back to bite him, because although it might be popular just now, when they realize, you know, that there's a lot more, you know, when we know that other protesters were killed by other protesters in all the riots in America, for example.
Yeah, it's gone and
it's crazy. You know, there was an ex-police officer who was killed, a black police officer was killed trying to protect a shop. And so when you try and, you know, when you bring all that in, you know, it's a terrible mess. It's a wholly horrendous episode that went on. And you just want to really keep out of it. And the thing is, F1 companies are not stupid. you know, the managers, you know, like Ross Brawn and all the others, they're not going to go into this because they know it's going to just come back on them in a terrible way. So they're best to say, we're involved in motorsport and that has nothing to do with that, you know.
I suppose all F1 can do is get their own house in order. They can't fix the rest of the world.
Lewis Hamilton
can't fix the rest of the world. I mean, he's totally entitled, and I respect him having an opinion on anything. That's his right.
Absolutely.
I will fight for anybody's right to have an opinion and even to express that opinion.
Yeah.
The thing is that in Formula One, as a Formula One racing driver, all it is his opinion. It's not any more informed or less informed than mine.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. It's just Lewis Hamilton saying something. In Formula One itself or any other kind of sport or motorsport, all that the people in that organisation can do is make sure that they behave well. The route into Formula One is fair for anybody that with the skill to get into it. People that are having difficulties are encouraged in whatever way we can encourage them. Not favouritism, opening the door and giving advantages to people that don't deserve it, because I don't agree with that any more than anybody else does. Giving them the opportunity.
See, I think Lewis would be much better talking about how he overcame all of that. And then going into communities and actually saying... instead of looking for excuses, because the big problem is a lot of these big groups out there, they're not looking for people to try and overcome the problems. They're expecting government to kind of just give them stuff and fix it without having to work. And they forget that respect for like communities, if you live in a community, you know, it's any, whatever, whoever you are, wherever you come from, you know, you have to, you know, if you, especially if you start from the bottom, how do people who start from the bottom kind of make it? You have to be able to work and have a good attitude and be prepared to get on with people and keep trying, isn't it? And obviously stay away from things that are destructive.
There's a list of skills other than just driving a car fast. I mean, case in point, Fernando Alonso, widely regarded and also regarded by me as one of the best Formula One racing drivers there's been. Superb. I mean, the guy is skilled, really is. Why has he only got 2 world championships? And they're from the same team. And the why is because he messed up every single team he went in after he left Benetton Renault. He was difficult. The skills, the other skills, the people skills and that kind of stuff, he didn't have it. Ferrari, I mean, he got an okay in McLaren, but you could hear him over the radio, the kind of stuff he was coming out with. How is telling the world this is like a children's bicycle
or a Formula 2 engine F2 or GP2 engine.
How's that going to help anyone? And then I mean, look at the difference between the Honda that's in the Red Bull and the Honda that's in the McLaren.
You can see there's a better working environment,
relationship.
I did feel it was a mistake, mind you. I felt McLaren split that partnership up just a bit too early. I think if they just hung it out for another year, they would have started to see a lot more.
Would they? I don't know, because you see, McLaren have always been difficult.
Yeah.
McLaren have run down. I think the reason why McLaren is doing so well now is because of the new team principal, the guy that used to run Porsche. I can't remember his name. I do apologise.
Oh, was it Zak Brown? Zak Brown.
Not the CEO. I'm talking about the actual team principal, the one who's running the racing team.
All right, okay.
Give me a second, I'll look at it. There we go.
But it's an interesting one. And I kind of wondered, I thought, oh no, Lewis is going to make a big mistake here. And it's kind of, I know, it's up to him, he wants to do all the vegan stuff and all of that. But
Andreas Seidel.
Sorry?
Andreas Seidel, German motorsport engineer and manager. He was a team principal for the Porsche LMP1. And he's been there, 2 years now?
Year and a half, 2 years. And they're beginning to see the results.
It's totally turned around. And everyone that talks, they talk about how brilliant he is as a team leader. And he will have changed the outlook of the whole the team, you know?
Yeah,
whereas before with Ron Dennis, there were some things he did amazingly. Everything, you know, he had a sort of perfectionist eye. He was very, you know, nerdy in that respect. Yeah. But he was a terrible manager.
And he was quite hard to listen to because it's like he was all the jargon of kind of. It was. It took a bit of adjustment to listen to him in an interview. But obviously, very
when
successful.
The place was run. It was like lockdown. No one had an office. No one had their own space. Nothing could be personalised. It was like what's the word I'm looking for? It was sterile.
You
were allowed to have one photograph of one person on the desk, but you were hot desking, so you weren't allowed to keep it there. You had to take it away with you at the end of the day. So you never felt. I mean, I've worked in places like that, and when you're in a creative environment, when you're in a Formula One team, you've got to be creative as well as perfectionist.
And feel that you can work to your best.
If you're sitting in an egg,
it's not quite the same.
Right room, you're not going to get inspired, are you?
Yeah. It's interesting. We've had a chap called, or a person called Bingo, join us and give us a support of one heart. So welcome, Bingo, to the show.
Three people have joined us. We've got a Sean.
All right, because I'm not seeing I don't know what's happened there. But well, welcome to all our new guests who are listening at the moment. Sorry, I've not been able to see the new names come in. I don't know why that's not happening there. I've got my screen on full. but you're, of course, listening to the Car 7 Race Driver Show, where we always discuss Formula One and we do commentary on the virtual races. And we do lots of car banter and have guests as well. We were speaking to Will Daniels last night. He's a Formula One wind tunnel engineer and also a pro sim driver and a pro sim engineer to Josh Martin and others as well. So that was really good. So thanks very much for joining with us tonight. I hope you're enjoying the show and feel free to give us a comment if you like. But yes, as you were saying, Andrew.
Andreas Seidel. Yes, it's just, I think part of the problem is that the management and the approach in McLaren didn't gel well with Honda. I don't think Alonso helped that very much. Like I say, superb driver, and I think it's very interesting. It's like him and Jacques Villeneuve between the two of them. You know, you could have the best comedy in the world because the stuff they come out with. But in terms of successfully running a team, why is it Schumacher 7-time world champion? Was it because he was that much faster than Fernando Alonso? No. What it was is he paired other skills with the raw speed and the consistency that he had.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't the fastest F1 driver ever. I mean, I guarantee you he was not. And I don't even mean against Senna. Hakkinen was faster than he was.
Yeah, at certain tracks, certainly, wasn't he? He was very consistent.
You know, in the right conditions, he was very, very fast.
Yeah. But
Schumacher was consistent. Schumacher was reliable. Schumacher, you used to hear Ross Brawn say that he would say, right, we need six laps at this time. Bang, 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 bang. You'd get six laps at that time.
Yeah.
They compared him to Jackie Stewart because Jackie Stewart could do that. I've seen footage, an interview with Ken Tyrrell where he was saying that he would put at the Nürburgring, and you know how big the old Nürburgring, the proper the Nordschleifer, to a hundredth or a thousandth of a second, five laps of exactly the same time. I mean, that's astonishing. Well, Schumacher
can't do that. Yeah.
But that's on the track. Yeah. Why did Ferrari become so dominant in that time? It was partly because of Schumacher's skill at dealing with people and bringing the team together. And Ross Brawn, both of them, they had a skill of bringing a disparate set of people with lots of infighting like there is now together, working for the same goal instead of working against each other to look who's best in their little company.
Yeah, and Ferrari were tough. I mean, they had so many factions, but he seemed to get the right people in like Ross Brawn and others and made it all John Todd. And they suddenly brought a team. I mean, when I looked at it, I was watching one of the old races, and he joined in 1996. And yet, you know, by Spain that year, he won in that incredible wet race at Barcelona.
That car was not a good car. It wasn't a good car.
But he got a lot out of it. He got a huge amount out of it. And in 97, they had the car that was challenging Jacques Villeneuve for the title. So they went from being nowhere. I mean, with Berger and Alesi, they had a few potential, you know, I know that Alesi won in Canada in 95. I'm trying to think where if Berger won a race for them at Ferrari at that time. I'm not sure if he did. He won one in 94. I think he won the German, was it the German Grand Prix maybe in 94 or 95 he won? I can't quite remember. Or maybe that was later for Benetton in 97 maybe. It's amazing how it could have, you know, Schumacher could put it all together and to do that at Ferrari and get them really competitive within a very short period of time. Could you be challenged for the titles in 97, 98, 99 and finally got it in 2000?
Well, I honestly recommend reading the book with Adam Parr and Adam Parr and Ross Brawn. It's called Total Competition Strategy in F1, and he goes through basically what he did to pull the team together. So Ferrari, for was it 79? It was 10 years, wasn't it, that they hadn't won a race?
They hadn't been world champions, I would say they were an
upper midfield team.
Yeah,
a Ferrari, an upper midfield team with the investment and the money they had. And Ross Brawn recounts in this book, he talks about how there was an engine department and a chassis department, and they were next door to each other. And they both, and he was in charge of the chassis. He wasn't actually in charge of all the technical stuff. He was only technically in charge of the chassis. But if anyone knows anything about racing car design, especially for single seater design, is that the engine is an integral part of the chassis.
It has
to be a joint thing.
Yeah.
And they were like two football teams from the same town, you know, hating each other. And what he did is he did a simple thing where he invited, I can't remember the name of the guy, but he invited the head of the engine department to dinner. Every week they went, and then he had a chat with him. He had a nice dinner, like Italians like to do. Which is another reason I'd love to live in Italy. And basically, he went for dinner with him every week and developed a really good relationship with him. And they became good friends. And then suddenly they weren't enemies anymore. And they weren't football teams against each other. They were the Ferrari team. He would go into the factory and he would walk around the factory for an hour, all parts of it, engine side and the chassis side, and talk to everybody before he got in his office. He wouldn't go to his office, then go out. He would go round and say, see everybody.
Yeah.
And then go to his office. By doing that, everybody felt part of the team. Everybody pulled 10,000 times more of the weight because they were invested in the team then, not just employed by them. Does that make sense?
It looked so much better. I mean, they were getting, I mean, they almost won in 99. It was pretty close. And then in 2000, when they finally got it, was it in Japan, I think, that they'd won that final race against Hakkinen and beat him and got the title. I remember watching it with a friend of mine who had come over from Australia, and we were both big Ferrari fans at the time. And we wanted to see Ferrari win. You know, we were desperate to see them win a title. And Schumacher looked like the only chance they were ever going to get of winning one. And he'd come so close. And when he finally got it, and it must have been about 5:30 in the morning, in Edinburgh, in my flat, and we cheered as they finally got it. Murray Walker went mad. You know, the whole thing was amazing. It was quite an experience, but it was so good. And of course, he went on. Was it four races on the trot, five championships on the trot? 2000, 2001, 2003, and 4, and very nearly got it in five and six.
Dominant, Pete, because it cracks me up again. It's the comments that I get sick of reading and hearing. They're going, oh, Mercedes, it's too dominant and all this kind of stuff. And you get people talking about there must be cheating. And I'm thinking, you guys obviously have not been watching Formula One for very long, or you've got a really poor memory. Because when Schumacher was dominating in the F, was it the F 2001?
It was
just,
It
was a completely dominant car.
No
one could get close.
And his consistency and reliability was good as well. It was really only, I mean, it was like Mansell in 92 when he won the first five races on the trot.
Yeah,
You know, it was that kind of dominance, which I loved, because I love Mansell mania, especially winning British Grand Prix and all of that, you know, and with Murray Walker pumping, you know, putting his finger on his forehead where Mansell had a huge bump. And he said, "Oh, show the audience the bump on your forehead as he touches it." And now Nigel goes, "Ow," you know, like this is the only money can do in a live interview.
Pokes him in the head, got this massive bruise on his head.
Pokes him in the head.
Does this hurt?
You know, but there was such a good kind of repertoire between them. It was brilliant. You know, it was really, really good. But well, we've done 55 minutes, and I've got to do another live stream in 15 minutes on a completely different channel, on a completely different subject. So I better get ready for all of that.
Before we go, though, I just want to answer your question you said earlier. 1994, Gerhard Berger won in Hockenheim.
I did, so I was right.
V12 Ferrari.
That's right.
412 T1B.
And amazing looking car.
That was his ninth win, and his 10th win was in 97.
In the same trial, wasn't it? I think that was also at Hockenheim. Yes, right. Yeah. And his father had just died. His father just died on that weekend, or just before it. And so it was an amazing, it was such an emotional victory for him. I think it really kind of egged him on. And of course, the Benetton was quite a fast car. It was quite a good, had quite a good engine. And so it suited Hockenheim. At that point, because it was a long track at that point, so I remember watching that, but the emotions must, I mean, Formula One is emotive anyway, but to have that is something else. But well, I want to say a big thank you to all our listeners, and who are listening to the podcast here live, and when we put it out as a podcast, remember you can see all our videos on our YouTube channel, which is under my name, under Hugh Hattrick, and also the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. Hopefully YouTube will not bury it in the kind of the realm somewhere of the YouTube library. But normally, if you make sure it definitely is Hugh Hattrick, you have to kind of do it about three times to say, yes, it is, that's the name. Then you'll find that you can subscribe to the show or the channels there. We've got 38 subscribers, which is not bad. So for anyone listening, I know, Anne, I think you've already subscribed, so I do appreciate that. I think, Roo, have you subscribed? I hope you have. But
of course. On YouTube? Yes, yeah. I have subscribed on YouTube and on Podbean. So,
So you've got 4 points.
In your face, Hattrick.
No. I bet I'll ask Jonathan. I bet he hasn't. So I'll be at him.
In the words of Ahmed the Dead Terrorist, silence!
So it's great to have you on the show again, Andrew, with me tonight, and we'll be back on Sunday at 6 o'clock for, I'm sure, another virtual race to commentate on. I have no idea
what they're racing, who they're racing, where they're racing. Oh, they haven't told us. What a shock.
They haven't told us. It normally comes only a day before, which, again, that is ridiculous. They should have it at least a week before and advertise it properly. You'd think that would help.
Formula E, they said at the beginning, this is going to be 8 weeks. It's going to be every Saturday afternoon. It's going to be the full grid. There you go.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, and they've done it.
It's just all you want to know, isn't it? You just want to know what, where, and when.
Yeah. And then you know exactly what's happening. They're going to do, by the way, Formula W, seemingly. Formula W is getting an esports race with all the grid in there. Yeah. So that could be quite good. Because Formula 3 is a great race to have. Great cars.
Will they put grid boys in Formula W?
Because
it'd be kind of even out, and then you can have grid girls and the rest of it. I don't know.
Please don't.
Grid boys and, well, you that could get the Chippendales in, you know.
No, there'll be some ugly SJW kind of Corbyn supporting.
They've got some balding trucker with a big fat belly.
There's something else.
I tell you, that'll be out. I mean, I'm not a feminist, okay? But that would be funny.
That would be quite proper payback. Yeah, goodness me. I don't think Jamie Chadwick will be desperate to go with any of them, that's for sure. That will be,
we don't want them throwing up before the race, do we?
No. Yeah, but something else, you know. But they'll probably say, don't stand so close to my car, you know.
I suppose if they were really fast at running, they'd have a pretty good slipstream, wouldn't they?
That's the thing. Well, on that note, we'll end it from there. But thanks very much, Andrew. I will speak to you later on, and on Google. So stay on charge, and we'll speak to you in a wee minute.
Not for long, though, because you've got your thing.
Yes, just for a wee minute. But thanks to all our listeners and all our viewers on YouTube as well. You've been listening to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my fantastic co-host, Andrew Marr. Who?
Fantastic, who's he?
You're going to do the final words?
Drive fast and outrun the virus, but try not to crash.
Excellent.
I changed it slightly.
Excellent. Did you notice? We will see you live on Sunday. Bye now.
Bye.